And Mike said he's going to come back or not?
No, Mike had to catch a plane.
Okay. Okay, are we recording?
We are recording.
All right. Well, now we'll call the regular meeting for Thursday.
Take five before you start.
If you guys want to take your conversation outside, but we'll go ahead and get started here. All right. Call the regular session or regular meeting to order now. Do you want to do roll call again, Gary, or just mention that Mike has left, maybe?
I'm just going to do, we got Lauren Howard, Casey Campbell, Scott Wagner.
All right. So first item is approval minutes from April 16th. I'll need a motion to approve and second.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any changes or edits? All right. Any opposition to approving? All right. Correspondence, other information?
I have none at this time.
All right. Any changes, deletions, or additions to agenda?
There's no additions.
Okay.
Yeah, we can't add anymore.
All right. Hearing none, move on to reports.
Sure. So I'll keep it brief here. A couple of things. This board approved the change to the GPIP zoning code back in February. It got its final approval from the Planning and Zoning Commission on May 6th, and it's scheduled to go to the Assembly June 9th for first reading. It required two readings, so the last meeting in June, hopefully we will have our new zoning code approved, and at that point we'll get our RFP out on the street. At our last meeting, we did ask to bring back Lot 16B for discussion. I'm still pushing with DOT. I've filed something. I've called them. They said they're pretty backed up. I'm still working with the local folks. I even went and reached out to one of the local surveyors to see if we can figure out what the right-of-way is. I've got a recorded plat that says something versus what the state's recorded plat says. And so I'd like to, hopefully ours goes through, because the right-of-way is 43 feet on ours. Theirs is 60. So I'd rather get this right. So it's going to significantly affect the developable property on lot 16, and we're not going to release that until our zoning code's done anyway. So we're pushing that back immediately. That's about it, because we got more things we got to do today.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Okay, if persons be heard for an item off the agenda, you want to address the board for item not on the agenda, now is the time. Okay. Seeing none, move on. There's no unfinished business. Move on to new business. Item one, the GPIP haulout, uninsured vessels. So I think now would be the time to maybe develop or get together our thoughts on what direction we want to give Gary to maybe look at, prepare, talk about, to bring back at a future meeting for action.
Just going over those two documents that Tor and I were looking at, it does not say that Wrangell has an insurance requirement. They ask whether or not you have it. There's an insurance requirement if you're working with torches and boom trucks and such, like if you're the vendor. And then there's the clause, like the liability, the hold harmless clause. So I think that there's been some misinformation. I mean, there is not an actual requirement that says you have to have insurance. They ask you if you do or you don't. So it's on the table. And then there's the clauses like Tor was speaking to. So I just wanted to, speak to that, clarify that, kind of what we were both looking at and the multiple agreements we were looking at. Because it's been stated over and over that Wrangell requires insurance, but that's not what the paperwork's saying.
So I think one of the things we need to, develop, and I mean, do we want to go the waiver route? Do we want to go, the city just doesn't require anymore, changes the contract? Do we want to go down the bond or the additional fee route? I mean, so what sort of options do we want to try and flesh out? Do we have something in front of us to talk about again, or multiple options? I mean, we could go multiple routes, and then we'd have another conversation with interested community members and try and hash out what we want to do. Because I think the abandoned vessel is a larger city issue that should be more encompassing working with harbors and trying to come up with a plan that would address that issue. But yeah, the uninsured hauled out vessel issue, related to some of the concerns like Casey mentioned, when something happens next to your vessel and they're uninsured, you're kind of out of luck. So how all that would get fleshed out, I think, is a longer timeline. Maybe something that could be implemented quicker would be just a bond. If they're willing to or able to post a bond to get hauled out, then that's something maybe in the interim while we are hashing out what we're going to do with uninsured vessels long term, abandoned and in the harbors and at the haul out. Maybe that'd be a shorter, interim option or something.
Yeah, I spoke to Stem Insurance at one point about the bond concept, and you have to back it up with actual asset, right? So they would have to actually procure that $5,000, cash or behind an asset in order to do the bond. So, like, they couldn't tie a bond to the vessel, for example. They're like, if they're like, we don't want this, like, so that didn't seem an option. So I did appreciate some of the ideas that were put forward, like an organization or a processor or a pool of some sort that was created to kind of back these boats so they could get called. I think that's a worthy avenue to explore. I mean, it's something like an organization that I work for could potentially look at. So I would like to kind of treat this a little bit like an analysis of, like, these are like three different avenues that we can explore, come back and with some more information, and kind of iterate on it. And so I do like that option. I think we should put that out there as one. There does need to be a level of coverage and expectation. Like, we're not just going to say, nope, we're just sign this waiver and we'll take anyone. I do think that having, like, a separate fee structure or having a bond or creating a pool of a fund, I think that's a good concept. I think there was a lot of people who were interested in that as well, who were uninsured. They said, yeah, we'd be willing to pay that extra fee or that extra amount per foot to be hauled out, to not have to leave town, So I do want to explore, I think, multiple avenues. I think a big question in front of us is, like, what is that number we're trying to hit in terms of a pool or a fund? I think that would be some good insight to have. What would be an average cost on some of these claims? Are we talking about $50,000, $100,000, $1 million? Like, there's something there, I think, in understanding the level that we want to achieve to know that we feel a little safer in that coverage. And I don't know who the right person is to answer that question, but that might help kind of set the bar a little bit on what we're looking to achieve.
Casey.
Yeah, I think there's a couple ways, but for me, the first easiest one to solve is the risk of boats being next to each other. And I think that one could be solved by just having a dedicated area. And then the next one is the pollution and then the abandonment issue. And that might need to be, I mean, I like the idea of a refundable fee or bond or something, and then maybe even you need a fee because you do need to build up a fund and cap it at some threshold. But I guess one question I kind of have is there an organization that could purchase a pollution insurance policy that uninsured vessels could pay into? I don't know if that's been explored yet or not, but that's one idea that just came into my mind. Because to me, the hardest risk to mitigate is the pollution and the abandonment. I think the damage to a nearby vessel is really easy to solve.
All right. And I think we
Cool.
need to include, yeah, I was just gonna, sorry, Tord, what Tord talked about in terms of the hold harmless clause. And it'd be helpful to maybe get some more context about that or more language. I don't know if Rachel, that's something you can speak to or provide context for in the future, like in an analysis for us to discuss and kind of understand what that language would need to look like. So we had some of that fleshed out further prior to bringing this to the assembly.
Yeah, I think you've probably got a pretty good one on Wrangell's or Halva Point Marine's old one. I mean, I'm sure Rachel can weigh in. But the issue, of course, with the hold harmless is they don't have two nickels rubbed together or whatever, or even middle class. You're not, is, you know, I think listening to this, and again, I can't speak for the whole assembly. I think you're going to have an issue with the bond. I think it's going to, in order for it to be big enough to mean anything, people aren't going to be able to come up with it if they can't afford insurance. I kind of like the idea of the $250 fee for uninsured vessels. I don't think you should put a cap on it because that, even if it doesn't get used for years, could one incident could burn it fast. You know, even if it got to be $1 million, that's not that big of an incident. It's, but the other thing I like about that is it also covers abandonment, not just the you know, appeal spill. I did my risk factor with the, after listening to the Coast Guard a little bit, has gone down a bit. It strikes me that a spill on land is easier to mitigate anyway, because we have backhoes and things, whereas you can't do that in the water. And the most likely place to have a serious spill would be in the water, right at that transition point. Again, I'm almost just talking as a member of the public at this juncture, because it's your decision what you send to the community, to the assembly. But I can say that my personal comfort level with that would be pretty good. It doesn't have any upfront cost to the city, starts to build a fund. Obviously, we'd have some exposure while the fund is getting built, but it would be temporary, or at least, you know, somewhat temporary. You guys, in your opinion, what you want to send to us, but I personally kind of like that one, but.
Done.
So this is not an official document yet. Obviously, we're still in the deliberative phase here and bouncing ideas around, and we do have a waiver that we started to put together, but somewhat paused, as I was saying in the work session, because it really comes down to, did the city really want to jump on board with a waiver when there is an operator, and shouldn't they have the choice? Because if we wanted to waive something that they still didn't want to do for their own operational interests, it started to get messy. But I'd be happy to send this draft to the board to look at, and see if this is the right direction. I think it's a fairly strong document. What we had put in the initial draft was a $250 non-refundable fee, as we talked about, but this one also included a $5,000 refundable bond, as we talked about. So both there, whether it's us or Highmark, you know, keep the 250 not refundable, the 5,000 if nothing happens, that's returned. But it's basically 3 pages worth of all the things that that you're agreeing to. There's a section on here where you're acknowledging that you do not have insurance coverage. There's a section where assumption of risk, so anything that happens to your boat. There's a release of release and waiver of claims. There's an indemnification section, environmental responsibilities and indemnification. There is a section that talks about abandonment. So if the vessel is abandoned, there's some remedies in here, and then a whole section on debt recovery and enforcement. So if you do hold harmless and there are costs associated, then there's basically about 10 steps of what the city will do to make themselves whole under that hold harmless. But I'd be happy to send this, but again, it's not anything published for the packet yet, because it's not done yet.
How would you guys deal with abandonment? I mean, we're talking about somebody who just really can't pay anything. Are they supposed to pay for the crushing up and disposal of the? Does that fall on the taxpayers?
I mean, this is going to be another oversimplified answer, but if a vessel's abandoned, essentially, and Rachel, I might need your help here, we would take possession of the vessel. If it's something that we can auction off to recover costs, it would be auctioned off. And if it cannot be auctioned off and has to be destroyed, We would destroy the vessel, but we would still pursue those expenses from the owner of that vessel that abandoned it. There are collections efforts that then we would take that could include our municipal collections, which is in code. We could charge interest that's due on that on that account. And this is in our code too, section 4.20. Any debt owed to the municipality by an individual could eventually lead to us disconnecting your utilities until the debt is paid. And then of course there's legal remedies through the court, things like PFD, garnishment, which is a more difficult process to go through, but we have some steps to recoup those costs. But in the meantime, the debt is still going to be likely sitting on the general fund.
So this agreement, though, that this would have to be added to the contract with Highmark as part of their addendum.
If this is a route that the board prefers to go and it gets assembly concurrence, I think it's something that the city and Highmark are going to have to discuss to ask if they want to administer this or if we are going to administer this.
Okay.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that very much and would like to see that. Yeah, and I think that it seems like it's going to be a combination of things, and maybe it's something where there's that fee, then that just continues to grow that fund. And then maybe in the interim, while that fund is little to nothing, then we do have a bond requirement. And maybe there's a valve point in which we decide to turn that off. So these are some decision points that maybe we can talk about. And I think that just leads back to the understanding of like, what are some of those dollar marks that we'd want to try to hit? And what are some of those milestones that could maybe affect some changes in this policy in the future?
So, I don't know, John, would it be Public Works or Harbors who would have the cost of having to demo some boats so we could ballpark? Is that $2,500? Is that $10,000?
I don't think Brandon's here, is he?
No.
Yeah. I knew he was going to
No.
try to be if he was, but it can get pretty expensive. It's definitely a lot more than $2,500. And the couple of dozens of thousands of dollars is what we typically see. But as far as well, we're just talking abandonment and destruction,
Yeah.
right? Yeah, I couldn't answer environmental spills or anything
No,
like
just
that, but
abandonment.
on a safe guesstimate, I would say between $20,000 and $30,000.
Okay.
That's what it was. I remember from my packet a couple year or so ago, it was about 30,000. Wasn't a big boat either.
Yeah.
Our biggest risk is not really that somebody who's willing to haul out to maintain their boat then leaves it. I mean, this derelict issue is really a harbor's issue, not necessarily just somebody who wants to maintain their boat,
Yeah.
I think, right? I mean, I
Yeah.
definitely think that there's situations where somebody could get hauled out, and then to replace all the planks on the bottom of their boat is going to be too expensive. And
Right.
but I think that's a rare, I think that would be like a rare for like occurrence. And I think the bigger derelict issue is really a harbor's issue. And then the risk that comes with hauling those boats out is different than the people who are really just trying to get their boat out and maintain it. I think I'm struggling with how to thread the needle between those two issues because they're not the same.
I think it leads back to some of the judgment call things, though. Like if there's a person who's maybe they're getting threatened by the harbor department and they're thinking, "Oh, I'll just go get my boat out, hauled out, and ditch it." I mean, we're like a small enough community that it's often easy to know that. So I feel like there is a level of like that small town information that gets around pretty quickly, where you can almost like character reference or vet the vessel, the person, to get the intention of what's going to happen. Like leading back to what John said, like there could be a situation where they're like, "Yeah, absolutely not. We're not hauling your boat. It's just the end of story." I'm sure we can end up with a blacklist of people as well. I mean, that's just real over time. So Yeah, I think you're right, Casey. I think like the demographic we're really trying to help are like the people trying to maintain their vessels, like legitimately just trying to maintain their vessels. And I would think that someone, I mean, it might be bare bones. I mean, coming up with $5,000 in the spring can before salmon season can be really tough for like a troller, for example. I mean, that's when you're like, I need to go make that $5,000 so I can pay the bills that I've got on my credit card from the winter if winter fishing was slow. Like I said, finding some type of an agency or an organization, and I will personally look into that through my avenues that I work with in the fishing industry and with trade organizations to look into those ideas to kind of help people in the interim that maybe couldn't do that. But yeah, it's kind of like that good faith effort, right? Like I really do care about this. I want to do this, and I'm trying to get my work done. So yeah, I will give you this $5,000 because it's important to me to run my business. And so I think that a combination is definitely going to be sensible and leaving room for that judgment call.
Well, I was going to open up to public comment, but Gary, do you feel like you have enough direction on what you're hearing we need to work on to bring back? Okay. Well, going to open up the public comment, and they want to address the board again on this item before we move on to our next agenda item.
Katie Riley, thank you guys for the discussion here. I think it's been really helpful and illuminating. So appreciate all the work and thinking that's gone into it. And I am, yeah, really favorable as well for the some kind of fund compiling. I would love if that fund could be interest bearing to have it grow over time. One thing, yeah, it was interesting to hear that the federal government seemingly deploys more discretion over haul outs than we're able to do locally, because I would not say that that is something that the federal government is known for. So I would be interested in seeing how we can work with the operator if there is room for some of that discretion to discern between people who are trying to do, you know, their annual maintenance and people who are, you know, trying to take advantage of the system. I think that community knowledge is built up over time, and it will be, but obviously, you know, we're starting a new operation from scratch with new operator in town, and like that I wouldn't say necessarily exists right now. So one of the things I was talking about with someone as a way to kind of increase that is there a way to if there's real concern about the condition of a hull, is there a way to have that boat pull up on the grid and go around and require like a video of the vessel bottom that you have to present? You know, are there some other creative steps that could be taken, or like perhaps it's an inspection? You know, you have to, and I know the guys at Highmark are like really busy and probably not necessarily possible right now, but can you pay, you know, $100, $200? You have to have someone come down from Highmark while you're out on the grid and like check out the bottom of your vessel so that they know you're good to pull, or is that something the diver can do? But just like looking for some of those ways to get creative to ensure that we can build that level of discretion up a little bit to figure out, are these boats, you know, is this boat safe to haul or not? And if it's something like you got to come with your video, and then you bring your contribution to the slush fund, lack of a better word, as well. Just yeah, I'd say thinking outside of the box on what the different options are to build up that knowledge and trust of the fleet a little bit would be great. So thanks for all your hard work on this, guys.
Thanks, Katie. Anyone else?
Mars, Marshall Troller. I just thought I'd walk up because I'd sent Lauren a CDS Seward documentation for both the application for haul out and a 45-page document on the City of Seward tariffs for harbor systems related to both their 330-ton lift and their smaller, whatever it is, 100-ton lift or 55-ton lift. I think it's 55-ton. But from just glancing over that really quickly, it's like that general fund is created from a series of tariffs from class vessels being hauled out, work being done to those vessels, contract groups working, or generally the city that runs the ship lift, and then the yard is leased out. Large ship yard is leased out by JAG primarily now, but the smaller shipyard is a separate lease company that's been there several years. You're generally allowed to work on your vessel with tools rented for environmental impact. It's a whole nother option than just looking at Wrangell's models, which Wrangell's models work great. I've hauled out there. It's awesome. Great place to haul out. I will reflect in Seward, historically, one of the largest problems was the city leasing out the yards aspects to people that were unworthy, and hence boats being dropped or falling onto boats next to them, and domino effect and fires. That was all that company's lease, which had insurance to cover those issues, well being in dry dock. That said, does Sitka have its own oil response team at all? Because that's something Seward's had for years since the oil spill, is every year there's oil response training. So there's a set crew that goes out if there's an issue. That's federal money. I think the Coast Guard could probably help assimilate a local oil response crew, since environmentalism seems to be the big topic. Oil spills, which on top of that, most of these derelict boats do not hold enough fuel in them to become a major issue. And the boats that are large enough have insurance. So it's, I think, a lot simpler than it's being made. That's all. Thank
All
you.
right. Thank you. All right. Anybody else? Okay. Seeing no movement, we'll bring it back to the board. So, I mean, we're not taking any action. Do you feel like you have enough direction? Do you want us to?
Yeah, we staff, John and I and Rachel
Okay.
and some assembly members have been working on this for a while. We haven't done anything, and we've been in discussions with Highmark and trying to figure this out back and forth. And we do have a draft waiver language with some pretty strong language in it. And so I at the next meeting we'll bring that forward for your guys' consideration, and then we can start that process.
I just make one comment that I've kind of harped on, but I would really encourage that in there be like an area for these boats to be at the yard and not mixed in with all the other boats if we're going to go this route.
And Gary, just clarify, you'll come back with some of those maybe numbers of like thresholds we'd want to hit for some of the coverages, like, or maybe
Yeah, I've
what a
actually.
claim could cost would cost. I mean, if there's data on it, it'd be
I
good.
actually have right here in front of me an environmental risk cost analysis of different scenarios for a 28-foot boat, a 32-foot boat. If this happens, what happens? Does clean water jump in? Does state DEC jump in? What are the requirements? What are the potential fees? All of that stacked up already.
All right. Anything else?
I guess another question. I mean, I know this isn't probably as common on smaller boats, but is there a limitation on how much fuel a boat can have to get hauled out? And
What?
in the bigger boats, you end up like limiting the amount of fuel because.
That's actually in our facility use agreement. You're supposed to not have it be full of fuel. You're supposed to have your bilge already discharged before you come in. There's already some things put in place now. It's just a matter of making sure that those are happening before they get hauled.
All right, answer your question.
It does. I was just thinking about how you're going to measure people's fuel. Like, most people don't have sight gauges in their boats or any sort of way. So they just do it by logs. But anyhow, okay.
Right. Well, we wrapped up that one, so we'll move on to item two, the Pacific Jewel Marine Vessel Movement Permit.
Hold on, I'm getting there. All right. So this is kind of a new process for the board and for the city. As I stated earlier, we constructed the haul out. We did get a request from Pacific Jewel Marine last fall to move boats from the haul out to its facility. The board approved the Gary Paxton requirements for commercial vessel movement operations within the industrial park. That was done in January, approved by the assembly. We received in April a request from Pacific Jewel Marine to he's ha has a an application to move this forward. And so the process is that I'm going to call him PMJ gave us the information. He wanted some of the information to be in public, some of the information he wanted to keep quiet because he did spend money on engineering reports. His packet went to the public works staff. The public works staff reviewed his application, and then put in here what I put into the packet, that he does meet all of the requirements, except there's two that weren't really addressed, and the two that weren't addressed. So basically, there's the overall proposal. Everything's there. And then when you get down into the operator's obligations, it requires a load limit and remediation plan. He hits the first two, load-bearing capacity, engineering's determined of the road limits, but what was not included was the remediation plan proposed by the operator to prevent damage to the common area on which the boats are moved, transported between shipyard properties. Design plans to engineer and reinforce common areas sufficient to prevent damage of the common areas for moving, transporting boats on the common areas. Public Works Director who reviewed the application is here for any questions. And I do have information set aside that if the board would like to go into executive session and review the entire packet, because it's not public, that we can't. I couldn't send it to you guys. It has to be done in an executive session. So, John, what do you suggest the next steps are here? Is to hear from Mark or hear from the board
I mean, unless the board needs to see the detailed information that was presented in the proposal, I see this as kind of a two-stage process. There's the proposal first. If you meet the requirements of the proposal, then there's the, okay, your proposal makes sense. Now show us the piece of equipment that you're using. I know there were some proposed pieces of equipment in there, but there's still the backside piece of it where it's okay, show us the remediation plan, show us what you're going to do to prevent damage to common areas or repair common areas as necessary.
And so
That piece is still.
here on the overhead here is the well, shoot, what did I just do here? It's the plan to his pathway to move vessels, as you can see, will come from the vessel transferred area down the road with the different turning radiuses. And then here at the beginning, he talks about his proposal here. So, but this was all in the packet and hope you all read it. But there are some things once you get into the actual engineering that it didn't address those two points, and that's the recommendation or the direction from the Public Works Director.
Go ahead, Lauren.
I just made a note when I was reading this because it was there's like two contradicting sentences here where it's he says my message to the GPIP board for this meeting that it reasonably meets the requirements, but then it's also saying that it's incomplete. So I think that's what I'm a little confused on is that like Mark's recommendation is like, yes, this meets the requirements, but then there's these specific things that are incomplete. So he's not meeting the requirements, is what he's saying. And you're saying that we need to kind of give direction for that or that it is acceptable as is.
So I that's what I was trying to address in my last statement. I see this as a two-part process. And Gary put it up on the screen. Can you scroll up to the first part, Gary, where it lists the those four parts of the proposal have been met. That has all been provided. So I see this as a, like I said, a two-step process. I have no idea what that's kind of. I see this as kind of a two-step process, right? They met that, the proposal is there. Knowing that this takes some more work on the, oh, that's what it was. Thanks, Craig. He's worked here before. I think he knows how it works. So they meet the requirements of their proposal, but then when you go down and then you hit the use of the common areas, that's where we have to start talking about, okay, protection of the assets and the common areas that are in there. And it talks about the operator's obligation now that you have proposed your plan and you've met those requirements. These are the pieces you need before we can say, okay, well, here's your permit. So those specifically number three and four on that list are the parts that were still needed.
So then, am I understanding it correctly that like those are kind of last two things that almost the proposer and the city just need to kind of work out?
So you bring up another interesting point, and this is in Mark's email. The way the GPIP board operates, it's in code. This body has the ability to and should be issuing that permit. It says that the GPIP board is responsible for the management and operations and setting policies and enforcing them with assembly approval. So as you remember, this document was proposed through this board with the operating rules in there. This policy then went to the assembly. It got assembly concurrence, and it's now back at the board saying, okay, we approve of it. Now you all do this. So I think the obligation now is for the proposer or the operator in this case, I guess both of the above, but to provide that information to the board for the board to then make the decision to, yes, give them the permit.
So then a question I have then would be, is what's being proposed, the equipment, the weights, a risk to the common areas? I mean, they're not going to damage the main road per the engineers. I'm not concerned about a remediation plan.
That's the part that we're waiting on. That's what number three and four addresses, is will it damage the infrastructure?
And we won't know that until.
Until, as it says in the operator shall be responsible for all costs and repair, replace damage caused by, and it talks about their stamped engineers remediation plan or their opinion on what it will do to the infrastructure.
John, I have a question real quick. I mean, he's saying he's responsible for any damage. He's done that, right? How would he come up with a plan to fix damage if it hasn't happened yet? He doesn't know what it is.
We're waiting for an engineer to tell us that it's not going to create any damage.
I think that's my point, is if the engineer says it's not going to have any damage, then we don't need a remediation plan. Kind of like.
But which engineer said it's not going to create any damage?
Well, that's my point, is if once you guys get to that point, I don't think you need three and four. You're asking for something that you're also asking somebody to say isn't going to happen.
Well,
so why, if an engineer is going to say, hey, this isn't going to happen, then why does he have to submit a remediation plan for something that's not going to happen?
Well, I
think that's where I'm confused.
I guess if I could just win, I think there's slightly confusion. I think what the city is saying is it's not clear from what's been submitted whether it will or will not damage the road.
Right, but what they're also saying is that he hasn't submitted three and four.
Right, right. So I think we should, unless there's other questions, I guess, like to hear from the proposer, and then we have. Okay. Okay. Come on up, Jeremy. And then we'll have other public comment.
Scott, I'm not going to find this.
Okay, yeah.
So thank you. Jeremy Circa, proposer here, Pacific Dual Marine. The permit actually does address this, so it makes me wonder if, in fact, you have the old permit that you're looking at or the old assessment, but respect engineering, that's exactly the reason we hired them, is to address the possibility of damaging the roadway. That's not something that I could address, so that's why we hired these guys. We have well over $25,000 into paying these engineers to do these plans. And you know, what I gave you guys is just kind of an overview of what's in these packets. So our engineer had to figure out what the roadway was made of. You know, there was two ways to do that. We could get the plans from the city to assess what they used to construct the roadway, what the geotech study was. The city couldn't deliver those for us, so we had to find those, which we gave to the city. So now they have the geotech plans for the yard, and they have the plans for building the roadways. And so we can only assume that was correctly done in the past. So our engineers went off of those city or the engineered plans that were paid for by the city, which we found. And then the engineer assessed the asphalt and in the TM60, which is what we spec'd out. We were hoping to do 150, but that was going to require a lot more engineering and some remediation. So the only thing that was left to assess, and I assumed what the city engineer was referring to, was the entering and exiting the roadway. And they do point out in the permit that there is an asphalt abutment to the curb where we're going to be entering the roadway from the wash pad, and then that we'll have to create that same abutment or concrete. It could be asphalt or concrete where we'll be exiting the roadway to, so we don't damage the curb. If anybody's been out there, you can see the curbs are pretty bad, but I haven't argued any of this point. We plan on building those abutments out of concrete. And I assume that we would just go through the Public Works Department because they're the ones that are used to accessing that, you know, figuring out if we have the adequate amount of concrete and steel when we build that abutment. We're going to have to build it in the right of way, and so we're going to need to go through them as well. So that was just our plan to do that. I sent Mike Harmon the letter asking if that was okay, and I didn't receive a response, but I figured we would cross that bridge here soon. So I just wonder if maybe that permit that you have isn't the correct one or hasn't been read correctly, but the engineer does say that that this machine poses no threat to the roadway. The only thing that they want to see is that we don't stop on long periods of time, and that pretty much assumes that there's going to be a temperature difference. He didn't list that in there, but obviously the asphalt gets really hot, it's going to be more susceptible to damage than if it were a lot cooler. The geotech reports show that the underlayment is more than adequate to handle this or anything else that we can put on that roadway. It's just the asphalt and the curbs that they're concerned with damaging. And so as Mark Seavey wrote there, it sounds like the GPIT board has a discretion on how they want to treat those roadways. I'm not asking the GPIT board to give me any special deals. I just I plan on reinforcing the edges, even though the curbs are pretty bad on our end of the road anyway. But that's specifically what we're looking at. And then also I'd like to know that we have a oil remediation plan that we paid for, similar to, and that's how we know about the Coast Guard's or the fund that will clean up oil remediation. But there's a limit of oil, and so we're not really required to have that, but we did produce that just in case, you know, if anything ever happened, and we'll be ready to stand by to remediate any spills out there if it happened to have in any, you know, and then whether it's ours or somebody else's, so we'd be there to stand by on that, as long as Delta, as well as Delta Western, of course. But I believe everything is there. I was hoping that you guys would have a chance to see this. You can see the geotech reports. You can see the pavement plans. You can see our report produced for the oil response. You can also see the respect engineering's report on the TM60, marine travel of TM60, and then also some training and other stuff that we're going to undergo for operating the TM60, which is the industry standard for marine travel lifts. So if you guys got any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions for Jeremy? So I guess I'll ask you a question. So it seems to me that sounds like what you're saying is that the remediation that is being pointed out in 3 and 4 is what you're kind of will be proposing through Public Works, through fixing the curbs and others.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, there is obviously, you know, streets get potholes in there, whether that's our fault or somebody else's fault. I'm happy to fix potholes out there in that area if that ever comes the problem. We do have a hot tar kettle, and we do have road asphalt. That's our roof is a hot tar roof, and we know how to do that kind of work. So, you know, I feel like I'm probably the only one that really does any cleanup out there anyway. So I don't mind trying to make it look better out there when I can. We still haven't got back to the cleanup after this big snow, but we plan on doing that. So, but that's specifically what I think they were referring to, but we can, if they have the right report.
Okay. Any other questions for Jeremy? Okay. Thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone like to come up and address the board on this item? John, did you want to mark come up? He's standing.
Yeah, absolutely. But as he's coming up here, I was going to suggest if you all want to see those reports and the information provided, I think that's the opportunity to go to executive session.
Why don't we hear from the city, and then we can go on from there.
Mark Chivy, Public Works Director. So again, as John kind of said, as not being involved in this from the beginning, I see this as a two-part process. So one of them, the permit, is tied to the vessel movement plan. So that's the four items you have on top. And I think those four are complete. And then the second step, this part that if I look through this and I search for my title, that's where it comes up, is under the owner obligation or operator's obligations. So just as Mr. Circus said, it's got a spec sheet. He's got a report from Respec that outlines our 2009 geotech analysis. One thing that was unclear to me, and I haven't gotten a chance to talk to Jeremy about this, on the travel path for that lift, to me it looks like with a long lift, larger vessels on generally what's a narrower road, if you're having to make multi-point turns, it's unclear on sure that. But to me, if you're doing that, you can't do it without stopping. And in that Respec report, it says that the no damage assumes no stopping. I don't recall a time period being in there, but it says we assume that there's no stopping of the lift under full load. So if you are doing multi-point turns, that's a stop and generally steering at the same time, which is the greatest point that ground bearing pressure could cause problems for the asphalt. That's where it kind of stopped. There weren't any like actual axle loading calculations that they're in there stamped saying this is what is actually going to be the force onto the ground. We just have the spec sheet that says it's at 131 PSI ground bearing. So that kind of addresses the item, I think, 3, and as he talked about with 4, is any design plans. And as you go down further in that section, it talks at the very bottom, it just says that those have to be stamped by a licensed engineer in Alaska, and haven't seen those yet. So, but happy to discuss further if you guys get a chance to look at the other documentation.
Okay. Questions?
Yeah. So what Jeremy was referencing with reinforcing the concrete curbs, that's in reference to, I guess it's 4. And then Is that what you're saying? It's like that would be in
Right. So
reference
some
to four. So seeing that exact plan.
seeing what those plans are to do that, making sure that be sufficient, and then preventing damage as well, just getting some clarity discussion because we haven't had a chance to talk about this. I just got forwarded these plans. But to me, that movement plan looks like it requires stopping and turning and backing up and stopping and turning and backing up. And if that report says that stopping presents a point load damage to the asphalt that will cause settling, then to me, that would be, we would require some kind of remediation plan if that damage occurred.
Okay, so it sounds like potentially four has been met with information
We haven't
needing
seen
to be
them, yeah,
reviewed.
but
Yeah, and then we might need to send more direction back to Jeremy to cover three to make sure you receive the proper information to review.
right.
Okay.
Lastly, and then in my email, we talked about item two. I think that's still kind of up to this board, but it talks about a determination of the load limits. So I think our evaluation is it would exceed what a normal state load limit would be. And his report details that the roads inside of the park are access and utility easements, so they could have a separate limit. I haven't, when I looked, I couldn't find a separate limit set by this board, but I think that's the purview of the board to set a limit for that.
Yeah. You have a question, Casey? No. All right. Unless any other questions. Thanks, Mark. So we have a permit for us. It seems to be that the city is waiting on additional information. I don't know if the board would like to, unfortunately, until next meeting when the Jeremy can provide that information to the city, they can review it.
I mean, it sounds like there's some clarity from Mark that he has received some of it and has not had a chance to review it. And then he basically needs to sit down with Jeremy and give Jeremy direction on the rest of the information he needs. And that's all we can do at this time, ultimately, because it needs to be reviewed by the city prior for our decision, correct?
Yeah, so point of order for tabling, what's the new process for the city? To a date certain or to the next meeting?
You would actually postpone it, I believe.
Postpone, not
And when
table.
you table it, you've got it. That means it
Okay.
doesn't come off the table until
Got a
somebody brings it
vote.
back. So, yeah.
So I'd need a motion and a second though.
I got one quick question though. He mentioned something about we could set load limits
Well, just
in the
that
park.
the way the park is platted is different than the rest of the city, and those are not technically roads or access easements.
Right.
But
But I would assume would somebody come with us with like a recommendation of like if you're gonna deviate from standard DOT, like this would be okay, or I mean we're not supposed to make that up on our own, right?
well, we can, but no, we shouldn't.
What's the other policy that came along with it? I can't remember the name of it, the vehicle traffic
Oh,
policy
the
or
vehicle
something.
traffic policy basically addresses that overweight vehicles, which is everything that can't go on a road, will fall to this type of policy. And so I think if we've got a 60-ton trailer, and if you guys approve that a 60-ton trailer can move on it, then it can move on it. But the whole thing I think that Public Works is saying is that they're unsure that this 60-ton won't destroy the asphalt, and if it does, what's the plan to
Right.
fix it?
Or does the board want to abandon it completely and
Okay, no other questions, but we'll need a motion to postpone in a second.
yeah, I will motion to postpone this to the next meeting in hopes that the permit applicant can provide this information to the city in a timely manner for them to review it.
Second.
Okay. Now we have a first and second. Do you want to? I will now open up to the public for a comment on the motion to postpone to the next meeting. Yeah, Jeremy's coming.
Yeah, that's fine. I understand. Mark had mentioned that wasn't stamped, and ours was definitely stamped. So there's a possibility that we went through this process a couple times, and we had produced a couple permits. So so there's a possibility you don't have all the information. And then I would like to opportunity to address, you know, what you guys' concerns with. But the point is that I wanted to hopefully make is, I don't know what a timely manner is. We've, you know, I know the city's busy, but we gave 5 weeks, and then they were just able to review it last week, sounds like. So, you know, I don't know what the workload is, but hopefully there's some communication, and it's not just coming to the board to, so whatever we need to propose, that I can give that information, because I have to go through Gary, and then Gary's got to go. And anyway, it seems like there's no direct line of communication for me to give any information to the people looking at it. So maybe we can propose that there, not putting any undue burden on anybody, but I just don't know how to do that. So that's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeremy. Anyone else want to comment on this item? Okay, I'm bringing it to the board.
Can we put some urgency on this? I mean, considering the time that's taken, or is that possible to say, hey, let's make sure this is done by the next meeting?
I believe it could probably be done by the next meeting. I'm sure they're going to work on it. If you guys wanted to try to do a sooner meeting, we could try to do that. But I guess it would just be a matter of how fast.
You can set it off the next meeting, but the board can't direct staff.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Please.
All right. Need anyone opposed to the motion? I guess it's not money, so. No opposition. Okay. Motion passes. Okay, that's it. Last item, persons to be heard for item on or off the agenda. Last chance to comment before we wrap up if you want. Okay, seeing nobody, we will adjourn. Thanks, everyone.
I will. Mark, can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, how's it going? Let me figure out how to stop this real quick. Oh, how do I stop this?
what you were describing sounded like the old permit, whether we're deciding on free travel after TM60.
That's what I learned.